Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. Where we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave. Trapping Across America. The show that you're hearing tonight, I've redone the intro for it, everything. I thought I was going to be back home. I was out trapping out of state on a predator control job and actually filming for Trapping TV. So I didn't get back in time to do that, and I apologize for that. So we're going to put the show up tonight, and then we're going to have a regular show up this Friday. I'm not sure which one I'm going to use. I interviewed Brandon Johnson when I was down in Alabama, and I also had Norm wanted to interview me, which was quite interesting to say the least. So I don't know which one of those I'll do this Friday, but tonight's show was actually supposedly done last Friday. There was just no way. That's part of being a trapper the way that I am. You know, it's not like I have an office. You know, I've got to go out and do what I'm supposed to do, and sometimes it interferes with stuff like this, and I hope you understand. And if you're one of the guys that has sent me an email, I'm running about 600 over what I've got done today when I got home. So I'm trying to get through all those emails and answer the questions and different things like that. I'll get to as many of them as I can. I wish I could do more than that, but it's trapping season, guys. I'll spend a lot of time out of season answering a lot of those questions, but when it's this time of year, I can't spend 5 or 6 hours on email. And I'm sure if everybody were to put themselves in my situation, you would totally get that and understand that. Dude, I was down in Alabama, and I was having a blast. It was actually really, really muddy, which wasn't so fun, but it did feel like winter, like it did everywhere else, which brings up another point real quick before we get to our sponsors. If you're ordering something from a trap supply house, mine or anyone else, I've got a lot of guys that their shipments are running 3 and 4 or 5 days late through the post office. There's nothing that can be done about that, guys. The snowstorms that are from the west all the way out to the Atlantic Ocean has really screwed the postal system up. There's nothing that can be done. Even looking at a tracking number, it doesn't tell you anything. Because I've been looking up tracking numbers all day because guys have been not getting their stuff when they should. And when I started calling some of these places that they're stuck, they basically said, we can't get out and deliver mail because of snow. So until that kind of calms down, no matter whether you're ordering from me or from somebody else, there's a good chance your package is probably going to be a little bit late. It's not the guy's fault that's sending it out. I mean, it's just the weather. I mean, it's just reality of what the weather is across the country. The northern part of the country has been getting hammered, I mean, to no end whatsoever. We were below freezing most mornings in the deep south. So up north, I mean, it's frozen. I've talked to a lot of trappers, and the guys up north are absolutely getting plastered with winter storms. And it's going to be tough on your trapping, there ain't no doubt. You know, my advice is what my advice always is these things called roads that head south, get away from it. If you can't get away from it, use it as a learning experience. But when you get really, really bad weather, you're probably not going to catch the numbers that you normally catch. That's just the reality of trapping in that type of environment. But the fur you catch is high quality. There's no doubt about that. So don't stop trapping just because it gets tough. But, you know, be realistic on what your catch is going to be. Let's go on and get to our sponsors, because they're the reason that Trapping Radio gets to stay on there, especially since we went to a totally dedicated server for this site because of the volume of traffic. And we're still playing with our last player didn't allow you to download it. And so I think my web guys got a new player up there on last week's show to allow to do that. And if you're having any troubles with the players, email me and let me know. Now, there's a lot of wacky stuff on the market as far as computers and tablets and phones. There's no way it can all be perfect with everybody out there. But with a download, if you right-click on that download, you can save it to your computer and just play it through whatever media player you have on your file and not have to worry about the internet. If you have really slow internet, that's a lot better way than try to hear it over the internet. It's downloaded to your computer. You can save it after that, or you can delete it after that. But our first sponsor this week is Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Jeff Painter, he's got all kind of stuff up there. If I went through his list of all the different types of traps and brands of traps and lures and baits, I mean, he's a big boy trap supply dealer. There's no questions about that. He's in Virginia. He's also buying fur. He's a great guy to deal with. He got a good trapping video out of his own, makes his own brand of lure. If you're looking for somebody, give Scott a try, because he will make sure that you stay his customer, because that's just what he does. You can call him at 540-298-7227, or you can reach him at BlueRidgeOutdoorSupplies.com. Our next sponsor this week is Wildlife Control Supplies. They're proven solutions for wildlife control. They deliver value, expertise, and products to the wildlife industry professional. They are the go-to guys for anything to do with damage control, exclusion, bird and pest repellents, safety tools, anything that an ADC man has, they've got it at Wildlife Control Supply. You can call them toll-free at 877-684-7262. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. Third sponsor this week is F&T Fur Harvesting Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. They've got a complete line. They're like the Cabela's. If you're into taking fur, they pretty much have what you need, whether it's with traps, with dogs, with calling, a combination of all three. I think they have about everything but taking fur, but buying a helicopter from them if you want to go shoot them out of the air. And they have, it's really cool when you talk to them, because they've got guys that physically trap that are on the line. So if you have any questions or anything, you're talking to a trapper. And if you need some recommendations, I'll definitely give them to you, because they know, because they keep records of such things, what does best in a lot of parts of the country as far as luring baits. You can give them a call at 989-727-8727. Or reach them at fntpost.com. That's Foxtrot November Tango Post.com. Fourth sponsor this week, and the original sponsor of Trapping Radio, is Oki Cable and Trap Supply, which you can reach Jeb, which is the owner, at oktrapsupply.com or 918-429-4648. He's got all kind of stuff. He's also a fur buyer, like Scott Painter is at Blue Ridge. Scott's in Virginia. Oki's out in Oklahoma. He services several states. If you need to find a fur buyer, I definitely give him a call. He's a great guy to talk to. And if he can't help you out, guys, he'll find somebody that will. That's just the kind of guy he is. And you can get a hold of him on the internet. But whether you're looking to sell fur or buy stuff to catch fur, if you give him a shot, I promise you, he loves making deals. He's a great guy to deal with. He's still running a Z-Trap dog proof special with free shipping if you get 2 dozen. So if you're looking for some Z-Traps, he'll definitely take care of you. He was our original sponsor. Now, these sponsors that I'm using are guys that I personally deal with, guys that I know are going to take care of the customer, or they would not be a sponsor. Because I'd rather have a good sponsor than one I've got to have headaches with, or you're going to have headaches with, even if they offer more money. Well, I'm not going to really do a rant per se, but I am going to talk a little bit about drags. Because I was just down in the South. We had a bunch of guys that were trapping predator control group. We were shooting for the trapping TV footage, which you're getting ready to hear Mike Kimball tonight. And he's the one that I'm going to be interviewing. And he's actually running a tremendous trapper, but he's also kind of the ringleader on the video and the production and all that type stuff, what we're doing down there. But it was interesting for me to see the different styles of folks. Now, drags are an amazing thing. Stakes, especially disposable, something like a Wolf Fang or something like that, definitely an amazing thing. Tying off to trees is an amazing thing. Now, I went down there with drags and cables. And for 80% of the property I was on, that was the right move. But let me tell you what happened to me down there. We got in some really, really, really big soybean fields on the top of one of the properties I was trapping. Now, I can still set a drag up there, and you know, because I use a lot of chain on my drags, I can still have a set somewhat out in the field, but it was limiting because it was so sloppy and muddy and such clay that you couldn't drive across it. I had to make the decision to pre-hook the drags up on those big fields for the simple fact, not that I couldn't find the cow pretty quick because the sign would be so obvious, but he could go across a perfectly plowed level field with nothing in it till he hit a wood line. And on that field, that would have been a long walk. So I chose, because that's the equipment I took, to only use drags. I was setting a lot tighter to cover. In that particular situation, some of the sets, not all, but some of those sets really should have been out farther from the cover than they were. Now, I didn't take a lot of T-bars because I wasn't planning on doing a lot of water trapping. On the few T-bars that I did have, I can run the T-bars down through the drag where the chain hooks up. And that worked really well. Caught red fox, coon, stuff like that on there. But I did get to watch guys using stakes in the ground we were at, which was tremendously hard. Now, when they made a catch, they had a lot of work ahead of them. One, they had an extremely muddy, clay-based coyote or fox or coon or cat to deal with for the most part. And then they had to remake that set back in that muddy mess because there's stakes sitting there. They could have cut the stake, I guess, and moved it out. And sometimes that was forced because it was just too bad, you know. But the drags, when I caught stuff, what was so refreshing about it is my trap location was never messed up. And it never is, because the animal's away from it. So if you're thinking about some of the reasons to use drags, that's one of the reasons. I don't have to deal with muddy animals very often. That saves me time as a trapper. I don't have to remake sets that are just destroyed, because using long cables or drags, it allows them to get out of that area. Even if I stake the drag down, because he's on 10 foot of chain, he's got a 20 foot circle, he doesn't destroy anything, and I can put the set back really, really quick. But having some stakes on a job like we went on, I made a mistake for not carrying them, because I'm so drag focused, and in my particular places that I normally trap for predator control, they don't have these great big open, manicured soybean fields that's been plowed and you know, all that stuff's already been done. So it was, you know, kind of like a personal after-action review. I should have had, you know, probably 20, 30 stakes with me to give me the option to decide what was the best place for the trap, a little bit further out or closer to the cover, because I could have used some of the stakes and I'm not. So what's the point of all this? Don't get so wrapped up on one particular thing. If you're going somewhere, you know, think about what could happen and have a way, even if you don't use everything, how can, with a certain type of locations, can you work with that? You know, sometimes you need stakes. Sometimes you need drags. Sometimes if you don't want to carry the weight of drags and chains and you don't have the money to buy them yet, you can use cables if you've got trees and stuff right there. But a lot of times, especially going somewhere you've never been, it's best to have a combination of all three of those with you, so you don't have to choose maybe substandard locations like I had to on a few places because of the equipment I took down there. And that's kind of what I want everybody to think about. Are you using the best equipment for the best situation that you're at all the time? Because it very rarely, as much as all trappers want to systemize and have everything in an organized fashion, sometimes you need some oddball pieces of equipment always on hand and always with you, because you're going to see some stuff that you weren't quite planning for, but your gut is telling you that's where the trap goes. And my gut was telling me that I had the wrong pieces of equipment in a few places. Like I said, their interview tonight's with Mike Kimball, tremendous trapper, you know, world record 8-point, I guess you'd call him killer, taker, harvester, whatever you want to call him. He's doing a lot of stuff with our internet TV show we're going to be doing, And him and Scott together running, and they slayed stuff down there. They really did. Let's go ahead and get to the interview.
Okay, Mike, we're down in the cradle of the Confederacy. I've got a new phrase now after hearing that down here.
Yeah, I mean, that's landowners.
That's like music. And we could be outside, I guess, under the Spanish moss overlooking the lake, but it's like 28 degrees.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's going to get the effect on the radio.
So why don't you introduce yourself, Mike? Where are you from? Who are you? Why am I talking to you?
Well, I'm Mike Kemble from Northeast Ohio, and just kind of, well, I don't know why you're talking to me. Why are you talking to me? Am I an interesting fellow? I guess I'm just
you're playing around with two industries.
Yeah, as far as the trapping, just passionate about it. I've always been fond of the outdoors, and trapping kind of overtakes. I deer hunt and do all the other goodies that most outdoorsmen do. Just the trapping really gets my blood boiling, especially canine trapping, seeing coyotes jumping in traps. Just once you learn how to do that, it's a feeling you can't even explain. I assume that's why you want to hear what I have to say.
Well, before we get into that, though, I mean, you're like, you hold the world record 8-point?
Yeah, fortunately, a few years ago, I mean, I deer hunt a lot. I trap a lot, but I deer hunt a lot. And I harvested a 185-inch 8-pointer, which is the largest ever killed with an arrow ever anywhere.
And that wasn't fenced? That wasn't genetically enhanced?
That wasn't fenced. That was in Northeast Ohio, the cornfields of Northeast Ohio. So it's the largest ever in Ohio with any type of a weapon. It was the largest, second largest ever in the entire world. There's only one bigger one shot in 1964 from South Dakota. And if you put them next to each other, mine's a lot cooler. It's more perfect. It's everything about it. If you go online and look it up, just put my last name in, then you'll see tons of pictures. I mean, it went everywhere. The day I shot that
one. Do you have pictures on your Facebook?
Yeah, there should be pictures on there if you look it up. So the day I shot that, it went viral. It was crazy. Within a day, I was getting calls from across the country about that deer.
What do people call and ask about a deer?
A lot of people wanted it right away.
To buy it.
Yeah, I bet I had 40 calls the first week that I shot that thing. I think people try to jump right on you while you're still in shock of shooting something that size. Try to get you to sell it real quick before you... I think they try to catch you off guard.
What were they going to do with it? They didn't shoot it.
No, but it's collectors. There's a lot of collectors out there that are just rich and have big mansions they like to fill with gigantic world-class deer.
That someone else killed.
That someone else killed, yeah. I don't get it. I mean, that deer, I'll never sell it. So there's no amount of money I'd get rid of it for. It's just worth that much to me. It's worth more to me in my house than on somebody else's wall.
But you, I mean, like, this year you took another monster deer up there.
Yeah, I shot a big one. I mean, I got 7 or 8 on the wall. I think 7 on the wall that are trophy-class deer. And that's just attributed to putting a lot of time in, more time than anybody else.
Well, the reason I'm asking that is, to me, I think a trapper that snares becomes a better trapper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think that because you trap, it's made you a better deer hunter?
Oh, there's no doubt. Throughout the years, especially my evolution of trapping, from when you start trapping, what you learn and you start noticing, you notice subtle sign. And a lot of deer hunting, especially mature deer, is subtle sign. I mean, sometimes you get lucky and you see monster rubs, monster scrapes, but a lot of the deer I've killed have been early season, and you got to look for the small sign. Sometimes they're not going to walk a field edge wherever the other deer does. They're going to walk in the center of a woods from a thicket to a thicket. Just you notice sign more, and I definitely learned that from trapping. Places you wouldn't normally look. Just open my eyes up pretty much, and I do definitely attribute killing as many big deer as I have to trapping.
So how old are you, Mike?
31.
31. And you've been, how did you get started? I'll ask everybody that, just because there's always interesting stories on how someone gets started. Which is your
family?
Well,
me, it was actually my grandfather. You always heard him telling stories. I mean, he was real big into fishing. And as I was growing up, he was just getting too old. He wasn't really doing the hunting and the trapping thing anymore. But you always heard stories about it. So that intrigued you. Then you meet friends at school that actually do it, that are my age. And we can actually, their parents, his actual dad was still pretty young, so just friends, they were taking me out and they created a monster. So I just got into it from actually it wasn't even until probably 8th or 9th grade that I was shown trapping. And it kind of just blew up from there. I mean, I did it a little bit here and there. I didn't have a lot of time. I mean, I wrestled my entire life, 20 years of my life. That was daylight till dark. That's all I did. So really, in college, kind of opened up more, and I started doing what I wanted to, started going out of state, and just went to what we're doing now. I mean, after college, it really blew up, and I can get out of state a month out of the year, usually.
Why would you want to go out of state? I mean, it's so miserable here when we're in T-shirts in a day, and you can be at home when you got snow and freezing rain and cold.
Today is December 13th at home, and it is 10 degrees, my wife said.
Nice.
That is miserable. I think the wind chill is like negative 2. That's why I enjoy getting away. I mean, I'll go home after this little trip and start setting traps again at home, but it's miserable. Canine trapping in frozen ground and snow, brushing your sets off. It's a challenge, but
You know, it seems to me there's a lot of guys that dream about going out of state, talk about going out of state, but they just kind of trap in their backyard forever, and they think that's all they ever get to experience is that little part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make that first jump to go out of state?
Well, through them college days where I was starting to get a lot bigger into trapping, I had had a friend that I had met when I was younger and just got into trapping. He's actually another gentleman that taught me a lot about trapping. He's an old timer though, so he's still alive today. He's about 80, but he'd always, the story is a little longer than that. It goes into, he always trapped Arkansas. He's traveled everywhere and did a lot, but then he got cancer, so he quit. He didn't get to go anywhere for 10 years, but he likes to tell stories. So every time I'm there, every week I'd go over there and see him. He just kept telling me stories about how great the South was, how great going other places was. Well, a kid like me, I was chomping at the bit. I was jealous. I wanted to go. So, it's been probably 7 or 8 years ago, he was cancer-free, so I kept bugging him, and finally talked him into starting to go on state hopping again, and he said, you know what, let's go, I'm cancer-free, that's celebration. So then he took me to Arkansas over towards Stuttgart the first time, and that was just a different world. We went down a few months before just to scout, and he wanted to get his old contacts back together just because it had been 11 or 12 years since he talked to anybody. So that was a fun trip in itself, just going down and seeing it and meeting landowners.
Which you probably talked about trapping and what happened to him and all kind of stuff on the way down.
Oh, yeah, he's one of some old-timers that likes to tell stories. I bet I've heard a few of the stories probably 30 times since I've met him. But I definitely got to attribute a lot to what I do now to him. So he was...
Now, was he mentoring you in, technical stuff?
More yelling at me, not really.
More yelling?
Yeah. it was just a weird time because he had that cancer. So actually taking him out there, you always know the knowledge, but you kind of got to bring it back out if you've been away from something that long. So that kind of era, I kind of had to catch. I caught on pretty well to that stuff already anyway, especially the easier things, beaver trapping, coon trapping. So he was kind of just pointing to me, go set that, go set this. I really hadn't gotten into canine trapping yet because that's one thing I just don't think he had refreshed in his mind. So I'd bug him, teach me how to canine trap because he caught 70, 80 coyotes year after year out there. He was a pretty good canine trapper.
Last night you were saying that he did things old school way.
He still does to this day. I mean,
what are you considering old school, or what was he doing different than what you would do that I'm seeing you do now?
Just what I've changed. I mean, the first system I started using catching coyotes was the same thing he did, just because it's the only thing. It was the first thing that I actually seen somebody do. And he just uses canine woofers, which it's a good trap.
The BMIs.
The BMI.
Do they still make those?
They just started making them again this year.
Okay.
So he went out and bought a bunch more with the first year they started making them. I mean, this year they started remaking them. Double staking, which I still do that a lot in a lot of my farms at home. I just like to be able to pull everything. I use a claw hammer with a rebar, and they come right out just as fast as any other stake would. But I have started to switch over, thanks to you.
Disposables. Hey,
yeah, and even down here it could be a little bit of a pain still yet. Just old school, he won't use lure or bait at all. He will only use scat or urine. I mean, he uses the territorial aspect of canines to catch him. And he does well. I've seen patterns in his catch changing as more coyotes are, as the more the coyotes there are, the less that kind of works because there's too many of them. It's overrun. So that's when a kind of a bait seems to take over. I mean, I've noticed that. If there's not a lot of coyotes in an area, urine works great because they're going to want to know what's in their area.
Mm-hmm.
But in spots in Arkansas,
that's I've never heard anybody say that before.
They walk past and don't care. I mean, it's what I think, just the way the catch has been. But if you start adding bait or a lure to that, it seems to change. And maybe even different times of the year, that might be different.
Well, I guess it'd be like if you had three dogs in a kennel and they'd all go around smelling where everybody peed. But you have 100 dogs in that kennel.
Yeah, it's not quite the same effect.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So you're... Well, let's go over why the reason down. Then I'm going to get into the Dr. Phil of Mike on why he coyote traps and otter traps and stuff the way he does. But we're down, and me and my wife was talking about this because I've kind of hinted around kind of what we're doing, but I hadn't really said what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And with the trapping TV thing.
Yeah.
And my wife on the way down here, or once I got here, and I was sitting down at the gate, she goes, I called her. I'm here. Everything's good. Yada yada yada. And she goes, "You don't have a key?" "Nope, don't have a key." "Well, where are you going?" "Don't have a clue." "Well, where are they at?" "Don't know." "Well, does that bother you?" "Not a bit." She goes. She starts laughing. She goes, "So you're not really the ringleader of this down here?" And I go, "And it is awesome. I'm just down here trapping." You know, because y'all told me where to go, Clint went. Y'all told me to go here, Clint goes. You know, because this is, it's unusual for me not to be, you know, like the little general of something. This is really cool. And I still don't have a key, and I'm fine with it.
That's good.
So how are you going to describe, or what's the project we're doing? I want you to put it in your terms.
Well, we're working on, it's like a web TV show. We're going to come up with 13 episodes. It's called Trapper TV. It's kind of, well, it's you, I, Scott Adams, Brandon Johnson, Norm Blackwell. We're kind of just going to take you along our lines, show you some of the ups and downs of trapping.
You got to give Will credit. He's taking some amazing footage.
We got a great cameraman, Will Durston. So, and our goal is to show quality footage. I mean, we want to just open people's eyes up to trapping, kind of be an ambassador of the sport. And it's kind of evolving right now. Honestly, when they come out, we'll see how the episodes go. So right now, that's what we're down here doing. We're trying to film 3 or 4 episodes of it and put together.
Because what you're doing, and I, like I said, I'm just kind of stepped back from this because this is, I've got enough going on.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying this. But you're taking this to almost, well, it is. It's TV quality.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yep, that's our goal. I mean, right away, it's going to be great right away, but we'll definitely still try to reach a higher plateau through the years.
And it's not just like when I run off a quick YouTube video of
X, Y, or Z. We're not going to have that. It's going to be interesting. A lot of different angles, camera angles. We got a few different cameras running at times. Try to keep people interested. We'll see. It's an ongoing project. And even, I love trapping. So I can sit and watch a 20-minute clip.
Which we've done every night. We watch all the footage every night.
I could sit and watch a 20-minute clip of just somebody talking, straight monotone. But a lot of people can't. A lot of people are ADD, and you got to do different things to keep them interested. And just changing camera angles and adding music and doing little things like that keep people's eye on you.
And you've got some pretty amazing equipment. I mean, I'm still running Walmart handy cams just because I break them so often.
Yeah, definitely.
And you've got TV quality stuff. I mean, we were mic'd up, headphones up, everything last night.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got some pretty nice equipment. I've spent a small fortune on it to get it, but it's fun. It's just a hobby, though. I mean, I didn't buy that with any intention of doing anything. Just it kind of fell into our lap here. And it's just a fun hobby.
So when do you think that we're shooting for around January?
Yeah, we'll shoot for January to get the first episode up and try to do 13 weeks in a row. So, I mean, the good thing with us is we'll have a little bit of flexibility without giving a concrete date, but it should be no problem having something set by then.
Because we'll probably, the first year, we'll just put it on YouTube so everybody can find it and see what's going on. I think it's, from what we're watching, because guys that watch my stuff, because I'm very technical minded, mm-hmm. and I don't take myself very serious, but I take the art of trapping very serious, so I'm a lot more serious when I'm doing my videos.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't this.
Yeah, no.
We're just having a good time.
Yeah, we're having a good time. A little bit of instruction. We definitely want to teach people a little bit, but just kind of show you a different angle of trapping that most people don't see in a video you go by. And that's what we want to show. There's a reality of trapping that nobody portrays. Just like I was talking about last night, a lot of the canine videos out there have the perfect set. I mean, it's perfect.
With perfect dirt.
Perfect everything. Well, we're down here in Alabama, and we have yet to see a set like that.
Hey, Norm, have you seen any perfect dirt down here?
No.
Norm shows up. And he, the only sets he got, it's like layered red clay.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all burnt your auger up trying to deal holes, and y'all burnt a clutch up already.
Yep, it is a pain. And that's the kind of stuff we want to show. We don't want to edit that out and hide that because it's the reality of trapping.
Because, I mean, I know yesterday I showed a miss from a gray fox,
mm-hmm.
which no one will ever show in a video because no professional trapper ever misses an animal.
Oh, yeah. That's every video I've watched, that's about how it is. And that is so discouraging. Even when I was younger trying to learn how to coyote trap, most of what I've learned coyote trapping has been off videos, learning, and just going out and doing it. But you go by a video and you watch this video, and every single trap they have a coyote in it. Never had a problem. No sprung traps, no dug up traps. Like, that's discouraging to a person trying to learn.
Because it gives such a false impression.
Yeah, I mean, if they just show a couple, well, it happens. They get dug up sometimes. Maybe didn't have it bedded right or something, but it gets dug up even by the best trappers. We kind of just want to show little things like that. I mean, not extreme, because it doesn't happen that often, but it does happen enough to discourage you.
Mm-hmm.
If it was your first year ever trapping and you kept having that happen to you, I would be discouraged. So just showing that even it happens to any of us.
Well, I think that, especially with all the new guys, like yesterday, y'all had a good catch.
Yeah, we did pretty good.
And I pretty much got my ass kicked. I mean, it was handed to me yesterday. It was bad.
Yeah, that's trapping, though.
Me and Norm got... But that is. That's trapping. Yeah, it's. But, you know, most of the time, you... I mean, there's no way it'd be too boring just to look at a bunch of empty sets. But mm-hmm. that's reality sometimes on certain days.
Yeah.
You know, I've... Like Randy, you know, anybody that knows Randy, if there's something alive and breathing... He's bringing it home. And he went to Maryland, and he stayed for like 4 days, and he came back. He's not worth it.
Yeah.
We were going to shoot a video. I was going to have Will go down and shoot a fox video.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it would have been full of fox, the impression would be you just do A, and you catch fox.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's not reality
for
anybody.
No, that's not the reality trap, and that's for sure. I've checked a lot of empty traps in my life, and that's how it goes.
So... What do you think's your favorite animal to trap?
All of them, but definitely the canines. I mean, it's just more of a challenge. You get a smart one, it's really a challenge.
Are you referring to coyotes?
Yeah, I mean, any of the predators, but yeah, more coyotes than anything else. And we don't have a lot of fox where I'm from, so I'm really intrigued when we run into them. I mean, I hardly ever catch a fox. There's just not that many of them up there. I caught a couple this year, but just in accidental coyote catches. But yeah, definitely the coyotes.
So, I mean, what do you think if you could put a 2 or 3 sentences together, what is your philosophy on coyote trapping?
If I had to put some...
I should have gave you warning on that question, shouldn't I?
You know what? Cover a lot of ground with a lot of traps if you want to have any numbers. If you want to catch a couple of coyotes on a small property, use the best of the best equipment and make every set perfect. There's two different ways that I look at it. It depends where I'm going, what I'm doing. If I get a call from a farmer, I'm just going to be perfect about every single set, because really you don't need that many traps to cover territory. Like 500 acres, you can have a handful of traps on.
Mm-hmm.
But for what I like to do, the numbers, get as many traps out, as big of an area as you can.
Now, how many traps y'all have out down here, not counting DPs?
About 135, I think. A nice little line. but we're trapping 5,000 acres. Mm. Scott and I are trapping 5,000 acres. We have 130 some traps. I mean, they're spread out pretty good. We have them a little heavy.
How do you put up with him all day?
That's why we're going home. No, he's been great. He actually, the soon dethroned Possum King.
Yeah, him and Brandon and Possum King.
Yeah, he keeps it interesting all the time. You never know what he's going to say. So I'm entertained usually all the time when I'm around him.
So you use, from what I can tell, you're a 550 guy.
Yeah, and I used to have pretty much everything you could think of. Just I started selling all the old stuff off and just upgrading everything. And my goal in the next couple of years, I wanted to have up to 20 dozen set of traps, just because I want to do a huge line here. But it's hard to go buy 20 dozen MB550s. They're expensive. Mm-hmm. So I just started buying MB550s. I buy 2 dozen a year, every year. Just add it to the collection, and eventually I'll have my huge number that I want. I have, I think, 8 dozen right now. I love the trap just because out of the box, they're ready to roll. I've never had to adjust one out of the box so far. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, because even the MB550s have their problems. The dogs, like, they've been... The actually dozen I bought this year hasn't bent at all, but the first...
Oh, the round ones? The ones you're talking about that doesn't bend?
Yeah, right where they smush it, where the dog goes into the round part, bends pretty easy. Which isn't that big a deal. I mean, any other trap, you got to modify and do them things too.
Oh, there was a bent... Montana number 3, which hardly ever happens yesterday.
Yes, I mean, it happens to all traps. Just for me, consistency helps catch a lot too, just because every set I'm betting the same thing. That's why, yeah, there's a lot of reasons I like that trap.
And what do you do for your traps to get them ready for trapping?
Oh, I do the full. I take them to the car wash, clean them off, and dye and boil them. So I kill a lot of birds with one stone, though. I'll boil them in the dye to get the wax off. I don't go through 3 processes of boil them and lye. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to change. I try to kill 2 birds with one stone that way. And I'll do them all in an evening. Like, even my 8 dozen don't take me that, but a few hours to do.
Do you wax?
Yeah. Okay. I just feel more comfortable. Coyote trapping is being comfortable with whatever you do. Whatever method you have, all 5 of us down here have different methods. We all catch coyotes.
From watching the footage, it is obvious. You and Scott seem to be the closest.
Yeah.
Of what y'all are doing.
Yeah, well, we just live close. It just works out, get along. And we both have our families at home, and we a lot of similarities. We're, I don't want to say weekend trappers, but we have full-time jobs. I'd love to have a just job in this industry, but I have a construction company at home. Scott has his nuisance business, so we have a lot of other things we can't get away that often. This trip had been set up months ago just to get away.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of the same things going on. I think that's why.
Now, you do something, and we've talked about this, because it just makes me nervous as a cat on a tin roof when you do this. Mm-hmm. You don't use pan covers. You don't use underalls.
Nope. I will use an underall sometimes, just peat moss for the underall, but that's it. And I don't know. I don't even have a good answer why I do that. It's just one of them things that when you start coyote trapping, you get bombarded with so much information. I mean, it's just insane. And even kids that I teach a little bit to now, is learn how to catch a coyote the easiest way you can catch one, then find your own way to catch them. I mean, adjust my methods to whatever you like to do. Another kid back home that wanted to catch coyotes, I taught him how to my set. He uses pan covers now. He started catching coyotes the way I did. He just, for some reason, likes pan covers more because somebody told him he had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I have never...
But you're saying last night, though, because I thought that was an interesting thing. Normally, because of your job, you don't get to leave traps out for a long time.
No, I won't have a coyote trap set for more than 10 days, maybe 2 weeks if I have a long trip. But typically when you have a problem with a trap not going off because of hard ground, you get a hard rain for 2 or 3 days, and it just crusts over real hard. Well, it's never going to happen to me because I don't trap anywhere long enough. Just don't have the opportunity to go somewhere for a month and leave the trap sitting in the ground for a month. And I'll bet out of the last 5 years since I've started using the MB550, I've never had a trap not go off at the end of the that particular trapping trip. And even last year, Scott was with me, and he was giving me dirty looks the whole trip because we were using the MB550s, just that style. Bet them real well, packed the dirt in good, and just sift over, use nothing else. And at the end of the trip, a couple of sets didn't catch coyotes. He's like, I'm going to show you something here. Walks over, touches the trap, goes off. What'd you just show me? And I think in my mind, simplicity.
Just absolutely.
One less thing I have to worry about. In a pan cover, one less thing you could contaminate. One less thing I got to worry about setting the trap off with my fingers in it. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I went that route. And I'm sure there's going to be a soil I run into. I have to go get pan covers. I just haven't run into it yet. I mean, I've been to a few states. I don't know how full sand would do with my method. I would have to definitely go to a peat moss, and I think that's the next simplest way to take care of that problem.
Well, you've been you don't modify the chains. You don't add anything.
No, I mean they come stock with three swiveling points. I think they have five swivels in all, counting the D-ring. They have a center D-swivel, the double D-swivel, whatever you call them. And at the end, they have four swiveling points. I've never, ever had a problem. I've never had a twist off.
So you're not using shock springs?
No. The short chain, a coyote, if you give them any room, sometimes they'll take it if you don't have a good enough trap. And I've learned on not good enough traps. So the traps are good enough now to hold them. I think no matter what chain you have on them. But back when I was using the Canine Woofer, you give them too much, they'll take it.
So I think everybody starts with whatever they can get their hands on, hodgepodge.
Yeah, that's what I...
And I had more trouble with short chains, and I could get away with like 30-inch chains and not have power outs. To me personally, I think that a short chain panics a coyote more.
Yeah.
Because you pin him down. And I think the long chain gets him. And the other thing, the reason I still like the long chains, even though I'm using disposables, if I am using a stake, the burn circle's not near as bad.
Yeah, they got more room to roam and not tear up your set.
And back then, you know, I could double stake or I could single stake. I could use a 30-inch rebar with a 3 to 4 foot chain. They couldn't pull them out because they didn't have any leverage. Or I could use a short chain and beat in two.
Yeah.
So it was easy for me to add chain and beat in all in stakes.
Yeah, exactly.
So when your sets are really simple.
Yeah, for the most part, just dirt hole or punch set, flat set. I mean, whatever the location asks for. Eventually they speak to you.
And you're, from riding around with you and Scott yesterday, I mean, y'all hit every single pinch point you could find, and, you know, y'all jumped out, y'all put one on each side and rolled. Plus, y'all had a ton of DPs out.
Yeah, I think we had another 130 dog proofs out.
I mean, y'all been humping.
Yeah, we've been going at it. Fortunately, that area we've been in hasn't quite produced like we liked. Just not as much game as they thought where we're at.
And there's a lot of that when you go out. That's another reality of out of state. People learn pretty quick.
And when we first pulled up to the first location, we're like, wow, this looks awesome because it's textbook. Mm-hmm. It just looks like what you want to see. But you get out and start looking around, there's nothing, not a track, not scat. And then we're trying to come up with excuses why there's not in our head. And we were discussing it. Well, maybe they have dung beetles or something. Well, a week later, we'd know why there's no scat. There's no coyotes. Even though we ended up catching a few roamers. Mm-hmm. That is a reality of trapping. Sometimes they're just not there. In that particular farm, there's a lot of deer hunters. They shoot every coyote you can see. I mean, coyotes, they're smart animals. They're not going to be where they can get killed. They're going to go to the neighbor's farm where nobody shoots and there's more cover.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. So how would you describe, what are you looking for when you're setting your coyote traps? Because location is the most important thing.
Yeah, any intersection. I mean, it depends what part of the country.
If I was in Ohio, vastly different in Ohio.
Yeah, this is completely different. In Ohio, we have a lot of farm lanes, farmlands. You get two farm lanes that come together. That's a great location. Even if it's in the middle of the field, even better, because then you won't catch possums and stuff like that as much out in the middle of the field. But down here, it's the one farm we're trapping is no farmland at all. The other farm is all big woods with just logging roads in it. So that farm, we've just been setting up the logging road intersections pretty much, and that's worked real well. We're doing real well on that farm. And the vast one, there's a lot of huge grass fields that have big woods with points coming out.
And which is different from Ohio. Y'all square everything off.
Yeah, that's completely different to us. And that point just seems like every predator is attracted to. For one, it's a vantage point out in the middle of the field that they can hunt from. There's just a lot of good things going on in them points. So we'll set them points up sometimes. I try to find several things going on at one time. Intersections, food sources. I mean, everything put together right there. I don't even know how to explain what I'm trying to say. I had it, but now
you're using your hands, but we're doing a podcast.
I had it and lost it. But as much as you got going on, just try to find like 5-6 intersections that come together. The more you got coming into it, the more chances you have of catching numbers. I mean, it's your doubles and your triples. Because every cow in the world is going to walk lanes. You get 7 lanes coming together, You got 7 chances at an animal.
So what's different here, location-wise, in Arkansas?
Arkansas is completely different than this. This is a little bit of rolling land. Arkansas, where we trap, straight flat land. And we would catch more coyotes there only because of the terrain. You have 600-acre fields, and between them fields, you have one lane. Well, where are you going to set a trap between them two fields? You only have one lane to set. So every cow in that whole area has to go down them lanes. And if you get an intersection between all them fields, that area locations are picked out for you. I mean, it's just simple. You don't even have to guess about where coyotes and predators are going to go there.
Now, were y'all sitting on the edge of the where all the ditches are there?
Yeah.
Because you go to cut grass to jungle-looking grass.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You just try to set the edges of ditches where the ditches run into the farm lanes and stuff. And that kind of country is easy coyote trapping. If you're a first-timer and wanted to go on a coyote trip, you didn't know location that well, that's a place to go. You'll learn real quick about what you want to look for, ideal locations. Mm-hmm. Here is not that at all.
I think the difference between here is locations are easy, but you may be looking at 5 from the truck at one time.
Yeah, exactly.
So which one do you set?
There's just so many. They have so many different areas to hit. It's made this trip difficult. I actually expected to come down here and have at least 30 or 40 coyotes, and we're not quite there yet. Maybe we have a stellar day today. We get there. But
maybe I can pull my weight.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
So, you also do a lot of beaver and otter trapping.
Yeah, anywhere you can. Anywhere you can find them, I'll definitely try to do that. We've caught a few on this trip, and it pays it pays catching otter. I mean, we just trying to set up. I honestly didn't think there was that many here. There was no water when we come down here, but little did I know they would just have a drought. That's why there's no water. So, any water you find, every water animal in the world has to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done well. Like, every day we've caught an otter pretty much. Just, I bet we don't have 6 330s out because there's not that much area to set them.
Yeah, I can even. I set some raccoon traps. The only water I have on my property over there is a mud puddle the size of this room.
Yeah.
And there's half of it supposed to be underwater in a swamp. They've got levied creeks. I can sip dirt out of the bottom of them.
Yeah, I bet it'd be a different world. You come different time of the year when they don't have a drought.
Oh, absolutely.
It would look completely different.
But I can tell, like, from the property, I mean, where we were at in the afternoon, we were doing some filming, y'all actually had coon trails.
Yeah.
I ain't seen one over there. And I don't know if it's because of the drought, they moved somewhere else because there's no water, or what's going on. And it's always interesting. Now, when you're using, what kind of traps were those you were using, those Conibear or body grips?
I have every kind of 330 you can think of.
So you haven't standardized on a 330 yet.
That's one thing I haven't. No, they're beaver traps. They you can get thrown in. For beaver traps, I just want as many as I can. Just for like in Arkansas, there's locations everywhere you want to set every single one. So I think the other day that Northwoods, an old something I probably picked up off of old Jack or something.
So what are you looking for when you're do you ever use foot holes?
Oh yeah, that's probably my favorite trap. I would almost bet you could out trap, if you had a dozen traps to most guys 20-30s, you can out trap them with them dozen leg holds. I mean, they're more versatile. Even in Arkansas, Scott and I trapping, if we caught 100 beaver, I bet 60 of them are in leg holds. I mean, 330s are easy just to throw in any channel, but you miss a lot. The animals go around them. The leg hold, you bring them to you.
Say that one more time.
About the 330?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you set a channel, animals go around them. I mean, even blocking them down somehow, it doesn't make sense.
I'm being a smart aleck, but I agree with you.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me. And you have a 330 sitting in an area for a while, you set up a leg hold with scent and you catch beaver. And that 330 has been sitting there for 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely I love that newer trap come out, the TS85. That's what I'm starting to standardize to. They are a mean.
They are sweet.
They are a mean trap.
Now, are you a chain guy, a rod guy, slide wire guy? Do you care?
No, yeah. I have a setup. I carry a burlap bag with a trap in the burlap bag, and I have drowning wires built into everything. So I'm pretty standardized on the leg hold just because it's a quick system. I usually have a shovel. When I'm beaver trapping, I'll have some type of shovel with me just so I can walk. If I have to walk a mile, I can carry that burlap bag in with my set, with everything in the bag, my T-bar for staking up at the edge, fill the bag, set it up, throw it out in the water, and I can roll. I mean, you can get a lot of leg holds out fast that way.
Well, I think that, to me, that's becoming one of the lost arts. It's kind of like Connell Bears did the beaver trap and what the dog proofs are doing today.
Hold.
You know, you don't really have to know a whole lot. If you know what a coon trail is,
uh-huh,
you can catch a coon. And if you know what a beaver channel is, you can catch a beaver.
Right.
And it's limiting.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I think it's limiting. Like on otter, in creeks like I saw over there, those shallow ones,
mm-hmm,
I never set a Connell Bear anymore.
Yeah.
Two CDRs and a Mafia style set.
Mm-hmm.
And if y'all were to, it's interesting to try because I've done this. You put up Connell Bears on both sides of the CDRs and you'll catch stuff in the middle all the time.
I'll bet. I mean, otters could be a smart animal. I mean, they could refuse a trap pretty easy.
Especially when they get pressure. I think these around here are pretty much virgin.
Yeah.
I don't think they get much pressure around here.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're doing foothold sets, what are you, do you dig in the bank? Are you a back foot catch, front foot catch, shallow?
Whatever the location tells me. We were talking about this the other day. If I was going to teach somebody how to leg hold trap beaver, start where there's a pullout where you see beaver coming out of the water. If you look real close, if the water's clear or use your hands, you're going to feel a spot where they're going to step out.
Just make sure no one else is trapping there.
Yeah, make sure no one else is trapping there. But that's such a controversy about, people argue all the time, how deep you put your trap, how far back you put your trap. Well, let the location tell you. I'm not going to ever tell you where to put your trap. Usually you can feel in a location. We say yesterday, I explained this on video, I could put my hand out and you feel a little trough right perfect where you can see they push off of. So in the deeper water, it got deep real quick, and all you feel is scratch marks. Just be harder to set the trap there. So in that location, I'm setting the trap shallower where he's for sure putting his foot down. I mean, I want a guaranteed catch. I don't want to have no toes.
Mm-hmm.
And the drowning system I use, I don't care if I catch front foot, back foot, it's going to be at the end of the drowning wire. So usually just let the location tell you on the leg holds.
Now, do you ever blind set your foot holds, or is it always lured?
I'll set blind sets. Not as much, but I will. Yeah, I mean, I love the leg hold for pretty much anything. I mean, I think you're right. That's an art that a lot of people don't do. A leg
and
hold
it's
trap.
A shame. I mean, it really is. It's a shame because it opens up worlds to you that the Connell Bear guys. I mean, you got a four. That's what I don't like. I'm not gonna say I don't like it. I think it's limiting to be just a body grip guy because.
Yeah.
If the situation's not right for the body grip, now you've got to try to force an issue.
Mm-hmm. For a good example, in Ohio, we have otter now. We have an otter season. We're allowed to catch 3 a year. Well, when that happened a few years ago, everybody and their brother was out trying to catch otter. an educated otter, like you were saying, is smart. They will make you look like a fool, even if you think you know trapping, they will make you look like a fool, jumping on traps and just doing everything they can. So I switched straight to the leg hold at that point, threw the 330s out for that, and set a beaver crosser. I mean, I had this great beaver crossover, otter crossover set. I mean, they were hitting it every few days. They were coming through and hitting it. And I kept getting sprung, kept jumping on my traps. I mean, anything you can think of. Switch it to a leg hold. 2 days later, I had an otter. So, I mean, in that locations like that, you need the leg hold. I'll never catch an otter in the 330 over there where they're educated that well.
Are you using a TS-85 on that too?
Yeah.
With the same drowning system?
Yep, same system. And even that particular location is 2 miles back in the woods, so it's the simplest, easiest way. I'm not carrying a block all the way back there in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna depend on finding something heavy enough to drown it back there, but there's dirt everywhere. Everywhere you go, just take the shovel, fill a bag half full of dirt, 40 pounds, whatever, it usually works. I've never had any problems.
Now, do you heavy camouflage your trap, somewhat camouflage it, leave it open?
For a leg hold even?
For body grip. We'll start with otter.
I like to camouflage as much as possible. Some locations it doesn't work out as well as others, but usually always try to, down here we're not fortunate enough to have enough water to get a whole lot of traps under the water, but if you can hide a trap under the water, there's no doubt that catches more animals than leaving them in the wide open. I definitely try to block down as much as I can and hide them as much as I can. I feel better. If I can't see it, no one else can.
Right.
I don't
see. If nothing else, just for people.
Yeah.
People's sake.
Yeah. I feel the animal can't see it as well. I mean, they're going to go down that river one way or another. You hide that trap, doesn't look out of place, you have less chance of having refusals.
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect good.
I mean, I've heard other guys say, well, I think you get refusals having that much blocking, they're going to go around it. I catch otter, so I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you back when the cycle of fur of otter were really high, 7-8 years ago, guys that didn't block after the first couple of years of that, they didn't know how to catch anything.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not so sure that the animal is trap shy like people say, but they could be location shy and it's just in their face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've got night vision footage of muskrats going up to conibears and looking at them. I mean, looking all around them, trying to figure out. They know that that's not supposed to be there.
That's not right, yeah.
And a lot of the muskrats turn around and run away, you know, in shallow water. I mean, because it's towering over them, and they're, like, looking all around it, and their little brain goes,
yeah, I don't think so.
You know, so if a muskrat is going to notice that, I mean,
yeah,
surely goodness.
Think of an otter or a beaver, yeah. They.
Well, I guess it's sun's up pretty good, man. But I'm excited about this project.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
I mean, we've already got Scott and Brandon going each other to see who's the possum king, which Scott's egging that on. Like, Brandon, not sure if he wants in it or not, but he's in it now.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see a lot of the country throughout the year. I mean, Scott and I will be in Arkansas and here, you Tennessee, wherever you're going to go this year, and Brandon's going to hit up North Carolina.
And y'all have already been to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, we started the year off in Pennsylvania.
Norm will be in Georgia. I know he'll be in Texas with me. He'll probably be somewhere else. I mean, that's one thing I think it's cool about the show. It's just not like someone showing the same.
Yeah, it's not somebody in Illinois showing their farmland line. I mean, you get a versatility. I mean, every trapping region is different. You know that every place you go is different, and it's kind of what we want to show people.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fun.
It's fun.
And we'll see where it takes us. I mean, you never know where we'll be going next.
Yeah, well, Scott's wanting to go wolf trapping, wolverine trapping, going to Maine.
The wolf trapping, definitely.
I think we got us lined up to go on an absolute hog snaring slaughter down in Alabama.
Yeah,
that's going to be fun.
That would be great. Great footage.
For a fat guy, you can't get better than trapping.
And the hogs, maybe. That's a huge problem, and it's getting worse everywhere. Even down near or up by us, near the Ohio River, they're starting to get them and getting them bad. So, I mean, that'd be interesting to people. Even all across the country, that's going to be interesting to people. You see all this big fad with the hog hunting, but what about the hog trapping? I mean, it's just as interesting to me, and you my opinion, you can kill a lot more.
Now, just to give you somewhat of a plug, and you may get nervous what I'm getting ready to say, because I know that you're a perfectionist and you may be 90 years old when you get done with it.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been working on a really cool beaver trapping video.
A turtle. Turtle trapping video, yeah.
I mean, like, it looks like National Geographic stuff.
It looks pretty good. And that video is going to be more just about entertainment and showing people the world of turtles. It's a time of year that's sometimes not a whole lot to do if you're a trapper. So I get so many people asking me about turtle trapping because I'll put on Facebook turtle pictures. And it was a project I started this year. I always had it in mind. That's actually why I bought all the equipment I bought. It's because I wanted to do a couple of nice DVDs to get people into that kind of stuff that you don't see every day. And right away I wanted to be the best of the best with the quality, because that's what's going to keep people interested. That's what's going to get them to watch it more than once or twice. And it's been fun. I mean, we got a lot of great footage. It's almost done. Hopefully I can have it out in the market by the beginning of the year also.
Do you know, you have a title for it?
No, it's something I got to work on.
Well, I can't help you plug it, man, if I don't know what to call it.
That's the only thing. Why Mike Kimball and look for my turtle video? there's a few other DVDs on the market that are very interesting. I have every single turtle DVD there is, and I watch them all the time just because I like it. But the one thing I'm not going to do, it's not going to be about butchering. It's not going to be about harvesting. There's not even going to be a turtle dead in the video. It's just going to be about maybe even my cameraman and my kid are in the video, just showing kids things about turtles, teaching you about turtles a little bit, just showing you what's out there. Turtles are everywhere. I mean, everywhere I've ever been, there are turtles. And I think it's going to surprise people to see the kind of locations you can find turtles. Heck, at a little farm pond down the road, you'd be surprised what's in it.
Oh yeah. Now, do you eat turtles?
Oh, yeah. Yep. This year just got busy doing all this, but usually every year I'll have my turtle line out and we'll have a big party at the end of the year with a wild game, kind of a wild game dinner, and that's usually the main course is turtle stew.
Well, we've been here good, man.
Last night's meal, I don't want to rub it in, guys. Last night's meal was incredible.
Well, you know, sometimes when you're out of state, and I remember back when I first started going out of state, I mean, I was living off ramen, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and stuff like that. But you don't always have to eat like that. That's a choice I think a lot of trappers make.
You know,
we've had deer tenderloin here with potatoes and corn. It was amazing.
Uh-huh.
A crab boil last night. That had to have been 30 pounds of crab legs and crawfish. And it does the soul good to do that every now and then.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know what y'all been doing during the day, but me and Norm's been eating breakfast at the only place we can find food, which is
the gas station.
Yep. Then that's lunch.
That's about what we've been getting up early, so you're running short on time. You stop by the gas station and get there, great food. Get out on the line, work all day. We usually have been skipping lunch because we really just haven't taken the time to sit down and make us a lunch to take on the line. We've been kind of busy this trip because we're kind of limited on time. Then when you get in, it's nice to have a good hot meal, especially like that.
And y'all did a good job of finding this cabin. I mean, I've done sleeping in the truck, and I've done the tents, and I've done it sleeping in slave shacks and all kind of crazy stuff. This makes your trapping better because you're refreshed.
Oh, yeah. Every morning you have a nice bed. All of us have a nice bed to sleep in. And the landowners here have been great. I mean, they really have some nice accommodations for us.
Yeah, this has been an unusual trip. The guy I'm trapping on is a federal judge.
Mm-hmm.
And he is cool as snot. He's going to run with us today, so that'll be interesting.
The southern folk I love trapping down here. I mean, the people are great, and the people that we happen to be trapping for now are all very influential people.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor, this cat who owns this cabin, he's a doctor. I mean, you're trapping for a federal judge. Brandon's trapping for, what is that guy? I don't even remember.
Well, I've heard there's a state representative involved.
There's a state representative that lives over there.
Coca-Cola owner in Alabama distributor.
Yeah, I mean, these are some very, very influential people. So It's kind of neat just meeting people across the country with this whole deal.
And it's, you know, we'll close on this, but it's when you're at a when you're at someone's place, this is a lot different than just going to trap on a farmer. Not that one's better than the other, but their lifestyle and their expectations are so different. But the difference between if you find somebody like this that lets you trap, you build a reputation with those people. They can open up doors everywhere.
We're seeing a phone call. Yeah, we're seeing that. Yeah, one guy put this all together. The owner of the cabin we're staying in just started calling his friends. And I bet we have 15,000 acres to trap between all five of us. It's just insane how connected these guys are just by making a phone call.
Yeah, everybody's got the keys. They're here and there and four-wheelers. And
yeah.
This is the old South down here.
Oh, yeah. I love it. People are great. And I'd come back here in a heartbeat.
Well, all right, man. I can't wait to see what your first episode is, what it's going to look like. Because, that's some pretty cool stuff we've got.
Oh, yeah. It'll be fun. So, and hopefully everybody can get on. I think you can get on the website and it'll connect you over to the YouTube link.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I'll have that on Wolf Nation and Trapping Radio. And then eventually... probably by then we'll have a trappingtv.com format of some time, some kind up there. So you can know who everybody is and what kind of where we're going next week or last week or just what we're doing, what conventions we're going to be at.
Cause right.
It'll be, I think you're really going to see a different side to some guys that no one's ever seen before. Cause like when me and Scott did the 5x5 video, I'm so serious about it. His video was serious.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He's like a WWF wrestler.
Oh, my
here.
Gosh. I know. He's intense. He definitely has his coffee every day.
Well, I appreciate it, man. We got to go catch some stuff.
Yep. Let's get out and check some traps, and we'll see you guys in January, hopefully.
They're the in crowd. We're the other ones. It's a different kind of cloth that we're cut from. We let our colors show where the numbers ain't. We're the paint where there ain't supposed to be paint. That's who we are. That's how we roll. The outsiders. The outsiders. I will not get high and I never get stained when we saddle up and ride them in the pouring rain. When a junkyard dog with a alley cat, keep the wind at our front and the hell at our back. That's who we are. You out talking, walk that walk, wide open rocker. That's how we roll. Back to the wall, a band of brothers. Hit a player's gonna play and a hater's gonna hate.